Thank you for coming. Little schedule change due to July 4th. Just a quick recap for what we've been discussing the past few sessions. We were discussing the concept of emunah pshuta, which essentially means that we have emunah inside of us, and we don't really do anything to create that. It's something that's inherent. It's something that's instinctive. We gave examples of this, how throughout the centuries, Jews who have really had no connection, when push came to shove and they felt that something was threatening their connection to Hashem, to Hashem's Torah, and they would give their lives in order to them. That's the emunah pshuta, that we didn't have to recreate something new, but that we had it inside of us. So tonight I want to do a little bit of a different idea. I want to talk about something that's not necessarily emunah pshuta, but the fact that a person can come to emunah through observing the world. Just on Shabbos, by Mincha time, we had a Pirkei Avos shir, and we were discussing that there's an idea that Gemara says in Yuma that all of our Avos had yeshivos. Since the time of Avim, we'd always had yeshiva, and I have a poster in my classroom. I don't know, one of these like yeshiva scented out, like it's like a sukkah poster, but it's pretty good, so I hang it up year round. It has that quote from the Gemara that we always, from the times of the Avos, we always had yeshivas, and it has like century by century. The background is like different buildings, the architectures from the 1400s and the 1500s and the 1600s, and has in front it has someone dressed in like the style of clothing in the 1400s and the 1500s, 1600s, and then it has like people sitting and learning Torah, and it has like each one throughout the, you know, and they see them like, you know, the 20th century is like, you know, skyscrapers in Manhattan, like a guy in a business suit and like yeshivish, looks like Lakewood, whatever, and someone put it out. But the idea is that we've had Torah with us for a while. So someone has Ken Shlian asked, what were they learning? What were the Avos learning the Torah hadn't been given yet? So really, in Pirkei Avos, we're talking about how they were learning Midos. That's really what they were learning. But he asked, were they learning science? So I said, perhaps, because if you think about it, Avram Avinu was a little bit of a scientist. What does a scientist do? They observe the world around them, and they come to conclusions. Right? That's what Ken asked. That was my answer to him. It's a Rambam. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. So this is Mishneh Torah, right? This Sefer is not a storybook. This is a halacha book. This tells you what to do, how to put on tzitzis, how to wear tefillin, how to daven, how to, you know, make brachas, everything like that. Why in the world do we get a history? In the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, it's in Perek Aleph, the Rambam goes through and tells us, you're going to apologize, I didn't make source sheets for tonight, but I'll read with you. I promise I'll translate as accurately as possible. You can believe me on this one. I'm not going to make up anything funny. But the Rambam tells us the whole history of Avram Avinu in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. So just a little bit of background. He's explaining like how Avodah Zarah came into the world. So, you go to a fancy restaurant, and you have derech eretz. So, the person in the back made you the meal, but you say thank you to the waiter also. He brought the meal from the back where the chef made it. He brought the food, prepared the food, and brings it to your table. So, you say, that's one of those hibachi things, like they make the food in front of you. But like, you know, normative eating, or they, you know, like spray with the sake thing, you know, it's very geschmack. But the normal restaurant, you go to the cooks in the back, and the waiter brings you, say thank you to the waiter. So too, Hashem made the world, and he had, so to speak, we'll call them waiters, people who served us, the sun, and the moon, and the stars, and the rain, and the wind, and everything. And we said, thank you to Hashem. And we also said, thank you to the one who's helping me out. Thank you to the sun for the sunlight. Thank you to the moon. Thank you to the wind. But then, says the Rambam, we forgot about the one who's really causing everything. We only said thank you to the intermediaries, right? And that's the beginning of Avodah Zarah. So Avraham Avinu tells us, well, I'll read the Rambam before I get into it. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah says, Kevin Shenigmal Eisan Zeh. He calls him an Eisan, right? It's popular name now. It's Eitan, right? He's a strong person. He calls Avinu a strong person. You'll see he's strong because he goes against everybody. His Shotit Badaito V'Hukotun, he was a young boy, V'Lachsho B'Yom V'Layla. He started thinking, kind of like a scientist, well, what goes on during the day and what goes on during the night? To me, he was amazed by this. So how could it be that this whole universe is happening? He sees there's a pattern happening. Who's controlling all of this? It can't be they're doing it themselves. He didn't have a teacher. He didn't have a Rebbe. He didn't want to tell him. He was around in this society of idol worshippers. He was surrounded by fools. It wasn't like, you know, he took some online course about, you know, Hashem for dummies, right? You know, God 101. And YouTube videos to go look about. Well, teach me about God. I'm going to Google it and find out some information. He was surrounded by a culture that was the antithesis of godliness. They were steeped in this type of thought. The avi v'imo v'chol ha'am ovdim avodah zarah. Mommy and daddy did it. The family mesorah was to serve idols. V'hai ovdim imam. He did it with them. V'libo m'shodi l'mevin, he understood, ad shehesig derech ha'emes, v'havin kav ha'tzedek midaito ha'nachona. But he was able to perceive on his own truth. V'yod ha'shish shem Eloah, Echad, there's only one God, v'hu manhig ha'galgel ha'hu bara ha'kol. He realized on his own as a young boy that Hashem, well, we'll give the age in a minute, that he recognized Hashem is controlling everything. The ein mechol hanimsa Eloah chutz v'men. There's no other gods except for there's one primal cause who's running the whole show. V'yad shekol ha'am toim. He realized the whole world is mistaken. V'davar shegarim lehem ha'tos. What caused them to mistaken? Says she'ovim es ha'kochavim ve'es ha'tzuros. They serve the idols. Ad she'ovad ha'emes midaito. So the truth was lost from their minds. Uven arba'im shana hikir Avraham es bara. So according to Rambam, Avraham was 40 years old. So he was examining the world. It wasn't like he just woke up one morning. He was thinking. And he was analyzing, but the key point, I'm not going to read the entire Rambam, this is the whole story about getting thrown into Ur Kasdim with his parents. It's funny, Nachum Leibowitz, the great teacher of Tanakh, was once giving a lecture on an army base. Side point, but she asked like the soldiers, she said, you know, open up Tanakh, show me the story with Avram getting thrown Avram smashing his father's idols. So they're flipping through it, and the general says, this isn't the Tanakh I had growing up. Give me a different one. It's not there. But the Rambam brings us down this idea about Avraham being punished for this. But he was, we'll call him a scientist. He was able to understand logically on his own by observing the natural world that there is a God. So if we pause that, this is a totally different approach than we talked to in the previous weeks. Oh, we're talking about it's inside of us. You don't really need to cultivate anything. That's true. Nevertheless, if a person does observe the natural world, the creation, you'll come to the Creator. And for this reason, Rav Chanan Vassman, he was a major Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, he was killed up, Kiddush Hashem. Rav Chanan Vassman said that's why non-Jews will also be held accountable for not recognizing Hashem. This is a basic human character trait. This is not Jew versus non-Jew. Emunah Peshuta, having an inherent Emunah, that's us. But any common, decent, thinking, thoughtful, intelligent human being can understand that God didn't play dice with the universe, that there's a creator. Now, the reason why people might intellectually not want it, because then I kind of, you know, I feel a little uncomfortable with that, because now, if there's a God, then maybe I might have to change my daily routine, because after all, there's a reason why God created this world. But it's not a far stretch to look at the universe and to do this. There's a cute drush, I guess, from the Chasam Sof, from Parshas Va'era. He says, imagine a kid who grows up in the wilderness. Okay, and then one day his father, so what does he eat every day? He has this nice white crispy stuff that's on the ground, you know, it's geschmack, it tastes like whatever you want, and that's what we call food. And then one day, oh, I think someone's knocking your mind, thank you. Then one day what happens? So they cross the Jordan River, and all that white little crunchy stuff that grows on that falls from the heaven, that's again, that's what you want, food. Food comes from heaven, that's natural, that's what you normally do. Okay, so fine, now what do you do? He comes in and sees these like brown things growing out of a bunch of mud, and they say, what is this? He said, this is wheat. Wheat? What is wheat? No, you grind it up, you put some flour, makes flour, and then you bake it with some water, and you bake it, and it comes bread. He goes, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? That's like nothing grows from the mud. Food falls from heaven. So if you had an entire perspective, one way of looking at things, to change that paradigm shift and understand that, you know, this is what a miracle is, this is what's natural is, so that's what the Chasam Sofer writes. This whole thing is, we're just used to it. We think think for a second, how does a cucumber grow? You plant it. Isn't that a miracle? When you think about what the process that goes into, I have a whole book here that goes through some of these fascinating things. But that's what he's saying, right? Ma rabu ma'asecha Hashem, right? It's in Tehillim. We say this on I think the Nach Yom just finished or is about to just finish Tehillim, right? So I'll give a plug for the Shir, the Shabbos, the Siyam. But in Barchi Nafshi, which we say on Rosh Chodesh, as well as other times throughout the year. So David HaMelech just screams out, Ma rabu ma'asecho, how abundant are your works, Hashem, kulam bechochma asiso. You've made everything with such a chochma. Every single thing that Hashem has made has a tremendous amount of chochma to it. If we would stop and think about the natural world, the natural we have, Mola ha'aretz kinyanecha, the world is filled, literally a kinyan means something with your possessions. But there's Simcha Bunin, a pshischa says, Molarth kinyanecha, to be kona something means to acquire it. I can acquire you. I can understand you, Hashem, through your world. I can use the world as a vehicle, as a laboratory, as a microscope, as a telescope, as something I observe the natural world. I can use that to come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you think about the world is such perfect balance, like the atoms and the molecules, how everything falls in together. Like for example, let's talk about for 1 second oxygen and carbon dioxide. So if there's not enough oxygen, so then what happens? Nurse, correct? So what happens if there's not enough oxygen?
No good.
You die. You can't breathe. Intubate. Yeah, intubate. What if there's too much oxygen in the atmosphere? I'll give you a hint. Don't light a match. Everything's flammable. So the perfect balance between oxygen and the carbon dioxide is 21%. And despite all of the deforestations and despite all for the billions and billions of people who are living in the world, the exact balance still remains intact, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the natural world, everything is so perfect. Everything is so aligned. If you think about these things, like we just say, okay, I'm breathing. Baruch Hashem, ani noshem. It's a bumper sticker. Baruch Hashem, ani noshem, right? I'm breathing. Okay, thank God I'm breathing. But like, think about it. Like, what does that mean? The oxygen, that everything had to be perfectly calibrated? And all that could just take a breath? Chasei Hashem, the chol yom, right? We think about all these things. I have an interesting thing about the irrigation. I want to read you one thing here about plants. Let me skip that. I want to do one about water and ice. This is amazing. A law of physics that heat expands and cold contracts. Okay. Water is not an exception to this rule. As the temperature drops, water becomes denser. We'd expect when it freezes, it would continue to contract. If that were the case, then at the beginning of the winter, the top layer of the lakes would freeze, and being heavier than the warmer waters below, it would sink. Then the next layer of water would freeze and sink, right? This would happen until the entire lake would freeze over, and all the fish would die. Right? That's how it should happen. Okay. Right? If the ice were heavier than the water, massive icebergs at the north and the south poles would sink, fill the oceans, which would rise and cover the land. So the fact, Rokaha Aretz, it's all mine, right? The fact we got up and had dry land this morning, we weren't like, getting out of bed with a puddle around us, because the exact way that the water freezes and contracts, it's a fascinating idea. And the soil and all the things, the nutrients that come in. I mean, we could just talk about different miracles. There's one after another. But this is just a small sampling. This is satisfying. A person could take any one of the thousands of miracles, think about one or two things in the natural world, and it's obvious there's somebody like Avraham Avinu. Realize that someone is running the show. It's not an accident that these things happened. So that's one key point about that, how you could realize you could have an emunah and understand the Kodesh Baruch Hu just through the miracles of nature. That was point one on me. Any questions so far? Okay. So let me move on to another point. Whereas, besides from, you don't have to travel so far, you don't have to be a scientist and look outside the world, you can stay in the comfort of your own home, and you can look at, Yibisari Echza Lakah, from my flesh I can perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you look at the miracles of the human body, especially those who are in the medical fields, you will see it's divine design. The great Mashgiach, Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, I think he's close to 100 years old. So I think every summer he goes to Eretz Yisrael. And one of the apartments that he was renting one year, he was like a medical student. So they had medical textbooks lying around in the apartment. So when he's in the bathroom, he can't learn. So he took a medical textbook to read while he was in the bathroom. Okay. And he was reading this medical textbook. Hafla v'fela. One miracle after another of the human body. He gave a few examples. One that I remember hearing from him was that why the spine is curved. If the spine wasn't like an S-shaped, correct me if I'm wrong, but the medical textbook said that as soon as you would step down out of bed, you couldn't support it and your entire spine would break. So the fact that your spine is curved, some of us have a little better posture than others, but the fact that our spine is curved, it enables us to absorb the shock, right? That you can bounce up and down and your bones don't break because of, I'll give you one last thing about the eye. This is amazing. The pupil, right? Remember when you were little kids and you had these, like, your teacher, like, turn off the lights and then you, like, look in your friend's eye and you see how the pupil got big and it got small, right? They can't make a camera. They will never make a camera that's as advanced as the human eye. There are 6 muscles in the human eye and it does it over 100,000 times a day. These muscles. Can you imagine? When you get to make, I'll give you a few numbers then, but I'm going to show you. The eye is a tiny, merely 1 inch or so in diameter. An advanced, complex camera with perfectly precise perception, color, shape, distance, movement, replete with an automatic adjusting system in a small ball. But that's just one single eye. We have 2. And it gives us better range of vision and perception of depth and distance. and the eye has a feature that no other camera has even tried replicating: self-cleaning and protection system. Glands at the top of the eye keep on producing tears, which the eyelids spit over the eye each time you blink. How many times did you blink today? Right? Now that you think about it, oh, that's like the whole joke. Like, don't think about a pink elephant. How many times do we blink? We don't realize this. I mean, again, I'm not going to read every single one of these, but it's amazing. Right? It's the fingernails and the digestive system. Man, we get to eat yummy, yummy food. Right? We were speaking a minute ago about the natural world. Victor Miller used to keep an apple. You know this famous thing? They made a children's book out of it. He used to keep an apple on and just talk about the miracles you can learn from one apple. He would talk. You can find this on YouTube. So I was like 10 minutes just talking about the godliness of one apple, the seeds, and how the laboratories you need in order to produce this, and it's all inside one little seed. The muster you can learn from this. How much we can learn from our digestive system. It could be, we wouldn't want to actually look at the food the way it looks as it goes down our throats, right? By that point in time, it's been chewed up and the saliva and everything is gross. We don't want to scare anybody. But the Kodesh Baruch Hu could have given us that's the way you have to eat. But instead, you get tasty pizza and fries and steaks and shawarma and dips and salads. You get all the delicious food. HaKodesh Baruch Hu, and we can choose. There's a variety. You could pick, go to 10 different things you want for breakfast. Today I'll have cereal, and tomorrow I'll have a yogurt, and I'll have pancakes, I'll have waffles. You can constantly get eggs. There's so many different varieties of things, and they're all digestive. We can do it. The system, it's fascinating.
And the colors.
The colors.
It's just a miracle of the colors. Because if the food was amazing and everything is brown,
that's right. That's right. You know, the Gemara says that's why you're supposed to light Shabbos candles where you eat. The Gemara talks about that you're supposed to have light while you're eating because that increases the enjoyment. So what you were saying is a perfect proof to that. Meaning, well, come on, blindfold me. I'll eat my steak with a blindfold. No, we're not. Somehow, I don't know. But I see the steak. I get more, like a Pavlovian dog, right? You start slide. Oh, wow, you're a geschmackous piece of meat. But seeing is part of the enjoyment. Someone in the restaurant business told me, another side point, but why not, that they purposely, they dim the lights because you're satisfied with a smaller portion if the lights are dim. I don't know. He had a whole chachma wine. Like, I don't know. I don't go to.
You don't see the dirt.
You don't see the dirt. That's why? Okay. Let's move on. I want to do two more things. This is all from the human body. The heart relaxes and contracts 70 times a minute, 4,200 beats an hour, 100,800 beats a day, 36.8 million times a year. The heart beats 3.5 billion beats by the time we are 90 years old. Doesn't take breaks for relaxation or repairs. It keeps going from the time you're an embryo until the moment a person passes away. And even though it's a piece of flesh, it doesn't decay. The fact that we can remember the ABCs that we learned how to read when we were children is because our brains, the brain cells don't decay. It's the most, the human body. I mean, Basara Echsa Eloka. So we could talk about looking at the world from the natural world. And we could say, somebody's doing this. This isn't just a bunch of random accidents, right? We can look at the human body. Again, I'm giving just a few examples, but there's a whole sefer talking about these amazing things. Talks about the brain and all these things. Talks about the digestive system, right? It talks about the colors and things like that. I'll read you one little point of it. Presuming that the theory of evolution, scientists used to assume there were extra organs in the human body and routinely removed tonsils and the appendix. Not anymore. As the knowledge developed, they realized that there is nothing extra. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't make accidents. There's a funny old movie with George Burns, remember the comedian? So he played God. One of the movies was God. So they asked him, did you make any mistakes? So, yeah, I mean, like avocado's a little too mushy. Put like a few extra legs on an octopus. But other than that, like I did great. Okay, it's kefir, but it's funny kefir, but you know what I mean. But Hashem doesn't make any accidents. And we just pause and think about this. I mean, take a step back. Why aren't there more people who believe in God? I'm not saying anything crazy. I'm not saying anything any rational person couldn't believe, right? So I think the reason why is because it creates an obligation. And people feel really, really uncomfortable. We do all sorts of mental gymnastics to get out of changing our life behavior, right? We don't feel comfortable with it. Even us, from people, Rabbi, I heard a shiur Friday night about something on Hilchos Shabbos. Oh, don't tell me. I don't want to hear about how to like clean up spills on Shabbos. We get shaken out of our comfort zone. It's a little bit jarring. We don't like to be like, well, I'm happy where I am. Years ago, my wife and I were directors, youth directors in a shul, not here in a different community. And I remember the father, like we were talking, he had a kid who was a senior. I will not mention what yeshiva he sent his kid to, but he said, you know, my kid's going to Eretz Yisrael. I don't want my son coming back next year from Eretz Yisrael telling me everything I'm doing wrong. I went to yeshiva 12 years. I know exactly what I'm doing wrong. It was funny, but it was pathetic, because I'm happy where I'm at, right? I'm comfortable. I know another, again, we'll tell stories and stories and stories, but I know another father who's so upset, his kid came back from Eretz Yisrael and he wanted to wear his tzitzis out. The father said, if you don't wear your tzitzis out, don't walk with me to shul. Walk by yourself to shul. People get so jarred out of them. I don't know. The different shmooze for a different time, but I think that's the reason why people aren't willing to take the intellectually honest steps of just observing the world, observing the human body. And there's many more things. Next month's class is going to be the seven wonders of history. We're going to go through seven events that you will clearly see the hashkacha, the divine hand, in seven different parts of. That's why I planned for next week, next month already. But I want to end with the bottle of beer at the beach. You ready for this? Okay. Taking a walk on a secluded beach. You're reveling in the experience of being the very first person in history to have trout in this hidden spot. You sit down at a rock, and lo and behold, you catch a sight of a beer bottle standing upright nearby. Fizz goes your euphoria. You're not a pioneer. Why seeing that beer bottle right next to you shows you that you're not the first person to ever discover this spot on the beach? Because what?
Someone else was there.
How do you know? Well, beer bottle, but is it a logical possibility that a beer bottle with the label standing upright and the beer inside and all the ingredients on the side and all the little hechsher if it's a Corona, could that naturally appear?
Maybe Corona.
I think they changed the name after COVID, right? They got some Delta Airlines. They had a field day with all the different fire. Here we go. Couldn't a fire have ignited somewhere nearby, been blown by the winds, melted the sand and formed the bottle? And couldn't some sugar from plants not too far away have fermented in a puddle of water, been blown by the wind into the bottle? And couldn't a piece of steel landed on the top and over the course of years assume the shape of a beer bottle cover? Perhaps a piece of wood from a nearby tree could have landed on the bottle, stuck to it, and formed a label that some colorful worms later designed. Logically and instinctively, we understand there's a plan and a purpose. There's a purposeful planner. The bottle of beer is fashioned to stand upright without falling, contain liquid, and pour easily. The drink inside is tasty, the label finds information, and the cover fits perfectly. The bottle of beer couldn't have happened on its own. Somebody had to make it. This universe couldn't have happened on its own. It's not a hard stretch to strengthen our amunah when we think about these things. The Mesilas Yesharim writes in his introduction, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. I'm just going to tell you the things that need to be reminded and strengthened and chizik. I didn't say anything tonight that we didn't know. Maybe some of the scientific facts I looked up a bit, but we all know this. But do we think about it? And that's what it means. That's an exercise we could do. If you think about 10 million things every day, you're going to go bonkers. But you pick one or two small things in your life, the miracle of hair follicles, of skin, of how the joints move, how the digestive system, how the respiratory system. Things that when, unfortunately, an illness, God forbid, everyone should be healthy, when an illness comes, we realize something is simple. One of my Rebbeim once slipped on ice and had to walk with a cane for like six weeks. He said, I took for granted, I could get up and just walk to the outside the room. It's like, it's human change. We only recognize it after it's gone. You had a cute little toy, and the toy gets broken. The kid starts crying. Calls mom, the toy was here, the kid wasn't happy. But now, we had our health. Thank God. Now something happened. Oh, that's what I started thinking about it. But if we personally just pause on these things and reflect upon these things, this is a wonderful way to strengthen our amunah. To just think about, and again, to next month, we'll talk about the different, open miracles. If we really would think about it, I'd say, wow, there's no way that can be explained rationally with that. But I think the takeaway is that design and the purpose lead us to the natural conclusion, there's a purposeful design to this universe. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to be a part of. Because when there's a divine plan and I'm fulfilling my role as a divine ambassador through Hashem's message to us of Torah and mitzvos, then I'm somehow aligning myself. In Chassidus, it explains that the Jewish person is the link between creator and creation. That when we do mitzvos, again, mystical ideas, but we're able to connect and draw and to tap into that divine energy. We've clearly shown how the world is created with a divine plan. But when I align myself with that, when I'm leading a meaningful, purposeful life, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but when I'm aligning myself with that, then that's what gives a person a sense of a shtaltz, a certain, I don't know how you translate shtaltz. It means, you know, how do you translate shtaltz? It means to be upright, a certain pride. That's probably a good word. The real kind of pride, not the other type of pride. the pride that we're doing the right thing, that we're fulfilling the purpose for why HaKadosh Baruch sent the neshamas into this world, and we have it. Again, not to negate what we talked about in previous weeks, but that works hand in hand with the fact that we have an inherent emunah in it, we have an instinctive emunah in it, and these are other ways we can do to access and to enhance it, really. This is not a contradiction, it's just another way of looking at it to bring this point out further. Good. Any questions?
That's one thing that we can get.
Yeah, sure.